Today was the Yahrzeit of the Mittler Rebbe, Zecher Tzadikadosh Lebracha, from Lubavitch, the second Lubavitch Rebbe, son of the Balatanya, Schus Yogin Aleinu. As Rav mentioned during Shalosh Shudas briefly, that memory from Chazal, that Tzadikim HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Mamalash Naseim, that Hashem completes their life, that the day which they're born is the day which they die, was Makuya Mamish by the Mittler Rebbe. He was born on Tes Kislev, and he was Nifter 54 years later on Tes Kislev. The Magid HaKadosh, the Magid from Mezrich, was Nifter on Yud Tes Kislev, which is not too far away. And a year before his passing, not a year before his passing, but three days before his passing, he told the Balatanya Talmud that before a Yid passes away, a few days before he passes, he doesn't see anything physical in this world. He only sees the Or Hashem. And that night, he reviewed and he was megala certain secrets to the Balatanya about Avachnach, Shalom Zachar, Soydis about a bris. And he told him that a year from now, he's going to have a son. And he should call him by my name. He should call him by my name. And so he did. Rabbi Duber. And everything which the Balatanya was taught by the Magid, he put into practice. That year later, the Shalom Zachar, all the Kavanis, and the Bris Mila, and Vachnacht, everything, as the Magid predicted, was Makuya. He had a Malamed who lived in a distant city, but like in those days, and even today, rarely, but it was much more common, that working husbands would have to spend many weeks, months traveling in order to make a parnasa, and they would send home. But husbands and wives, they wouldn't see each other for months, months, sometimes years. And this Malamed would come, and he was a very chashav yid, to come learn with the Mittler Rebbe as a young boy. And he would go home for the Yomim Tovim. And he would bring home his check. And one year of Rosh Hashanah, unlike most years, where the Balatani would tell the Rebbe, he would say, "I'm expecting you back after Yontif." This time, the Balatani didn't say anything, and the Rebbe was clearing. Maybe the Balatani forgot. I come every single year. So after Yontif was over, he decided that he wasn't going to take the chance. He was going to go, and he showed up and he started to learn together with the Mittler Rebbe. And he saw that the Mittler Rebbe was on a madriga, that this Malamed couldn't even keep up with the Mittler Rebbe anymore. He certainly didn't need his help. So he asked the Mittler Rebbe, he said, "I noticed your father didn't say anything. He didn't say yes, he didn't say no, so I showed up, but I see that you don't need me anymore. So what happened?" And he says, "Well, this year, over the course of time, so my father..." I think Chabad, they do 3 months before they put on tefillin. Yeah, is that true? What? 2 months before. Yeah, so since his birthday was Tes Kislev, so 2 months earlier was during Aseres Yemei Teshuva. So over the course of that time, so my father did Hanachas tefillin for me. He said, when he put the tefillin on my arm, connected my lev, he opened up my heart. And when he put the tefillin on my head, he opened up my mayach. And he says, from that day on, I'm not the same person anymore. So the Rebbe said, "It's nice knowing you." He went back to his town, and that was it. Already by the age of 16, he was a Rosh Chabura, and he was teaching Chassidus, and he was very well respected. Everybody saw that there was going to be tremendous galus from him. But he taught very different than his father. He had a very different signon from his father. And even his davening was very different as an older person. But the way that the Balatanya davened, it was very well known, that he would bang his head against the wall during davening in his dvekus, and he would punch the wall. And in his dvekus, he wasn't in this world. And so what they did in order to protect him, because many times he would end up with a bloody head and bloody hands, so they lined the walls of the room with cotton so that the Rebbe would be safe. But the Mittler Rebbe, his son, was very much not like that. He was still. He stood straight. Nothing came out of his mouth. He was in a quiet dvekus. In fact, one time, the Gabbai, there were some visitors who wanted to see. Everybody wants to see how a tzaddik davens. They were coming, they were watching the Rebbe's davening. And the Rebbe was standing by the Amud, by the Bima, in a very deep concentration in his davening. So the Gabbai said, I'll show you the intensity of the davening. So he went over, and apparently like it was on wheels, so he just turned it around three times, just like this, and the Rebbe didn't move, didn't notice that what was going on. So he just made no motion at all to show that if he was magish anything, it was just in the oilemus. He was a person who was completely in the oilemus, mamish. He had very little to do with this world at all. He was such a mayach, so deep in Torahs of the Mittler Rebbe. I haven't had the chance to learn it yet. But everybody knows the Amkus of the Mittler Rebbe. I think we have 60 Sfarim from the Mittler Rebbe altogether. When he would say Torah, so you can hear a pin drop. There were hundreds, maybe thousands of Chassidim who would listen to his every word. But mamish, it was such a silence that you can hear a pin drop. There was once a very famous professor. His name is Hibbenthal. That he once came to Lubavitch, and he was by the pirates of Lubavitch, and he passed by a gathering of Chassidim, and he was so impressed by the fact that they were standing there like quiet soldiers. He said, "What's going on over here?" He says, "Oh, the rabbi is saying Torah now. When he says Torah, nobody says anything. It's such a quiet. You've never seen a quiet like this." Despite the silence, when the Rebbe would begin to say Torah, he would go, "Shah, shah, shh, shh." So the tzaddikim explained the reason why is because his mind would move so quickly, and he had so many thoughts of Torah come in, so he would silence his thoughts so that he'd say when he was saying Torah. He had to quiet his thoughts so that he can have a concrete machshava to be able to give over. Halavai, we should have such problems. They said about the Belzer Rav Tur, Barla, that even when he was running away, when he was fleeing Europe, so on the trains, whatever it was, he made sure to keep every single minhag bells. Every minhag bells he kept. And it's not the time to talk about it. We spoke about Ra'ala a different time. And so one time when he was sitting with just, I think it was on a train, with just two people, and he was having tish. But, and before that, the oilum was there, so he would say, shah, 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 shah. Just like he would do in bells. He kept every single minhag. So the tzaddikim explained that the reason why he did that was because the malachim were coming, and there was a big when he would give tish, so the malachim would come, and it made a lot of noise. So he was telling the malachim to be quiet, so he could say it's time to say the Torah. I'm imamin b'muna shleima on such a thing. I'm 100% b'muna shleima. In fact, the mind of the Mittler Rebbe was so fast, it was so quick. when he would write Torah, so. You know, nowadays, you know, our ink of our pens dries very quickly. It came out, it's in seconds. But in those days, it took time for it to dry. So by the time he was writing on the page, he was at the bottom of the page, the ink at the top of the page was still wet. That's how quickly he wrote. So the Chassidim were convinced that he did it with Hashbas HaKomis, that he had a certain Shema Kaddish that he said, which allowed him to write so quickly. There were Tzaddikim who did that. But they said, no, Chas V'Shalom, he didn't do it like that. It says that his hand was attached to his mind. And his mind moved so quickly, his hand had to move quickly also because of the merutzas ha-machshava. His hand would move lightning speed because his machshavas were so fast. The Ragachever once said about the Mittler Rebbe, you know, the Ragachever was a Lubavitcher chassid. And although he's not known in the Litvshel like that, but he was very much aduk to the Indian of Lubavitch. So he once referred to the Mittler Rebbe in conversation as Ga'oin ha-Ga'oinim. Like the giant of all giants. Somebody said, well, you're living, you know, 100 years after him. How would you know? So he said, I see from the Torah HaChassidus, which he says, that he's a goyin ha-goyin. That when it came to Nigla too, that he was nobody like him. He was unmatched. He was Nigla. I see that by my Rebbe, by the way, also. I never heard anything from my Rebbe in Nigla. I can see from my Rebbe that from the way that he says Tarim Pnimius, that he's unmatched in Migdal also. See that also. When he heard about the Ptira of his father, Valatanya, he wasn't by his father. He was in a faraway city. He was being Isaac in some Sarchit Tzibur. He was a very big proponent of the Chassidim, who were very poor in that time, and he encouraged them to move to the farm so that they would have parnasas, different professions, and working the farm, and he encouraged them to do so, and he was very involved in that. He would go out and establish, you know, the community and the shuls, and he was very involved in the lives of the Chassidim in that way. And he was on one of these trips when he heard about the fear of his father, about the Balatanya. And when he heard about it, it shocked him, and he fainted when he heard it. So when he woke up and he remembered that his father passed away, he fainted again. This happened numerous times. He would wake up and then he would remember that his father passed away. He fainted. So he didn't know what the Eitzah was. So they brought him a box of the Sfarim of the Balatanya. So this time when he woke up, he looked at the box and he saw his father's Ksavim. He saw the Sfarim. He said, in the Yiddish Shprach, I can't say, but he said, "I see that there's yet what to live for." That's what he said. And then he was a mensch after that. The Rishner, the Heilige Rishner, he had many Heilige children. And he had a Malamed who was a Lubavitcher Chassid. And this Lubavitcher Chassid would sneak in Tyres of the Mithla Rebbe to teach the sons of the Rishner. He didn't think the Rishner would like it, so he didn't show the Rishner. And whenever he felt that the Rishner was coming in, so he would quickly hide the Sefer so that he wouldn't see. One time he left it on the table and he had to go to the bathroom, and the Rishner came and he walked in. He saw the Rishner was looking at it, and he was very nervous what the reaction would be. The Rishner was looking, and he looked, and he looked, and he turned around, and he saw the Malamin, and he said to him, "Emesa Ruach HaKodesh. Emesa Ruach HaKodesh." That's what he said. He was very pleased by that reaction. Once the Rashab, who was the grandson of the Mitla Rebbe, there was a professor who came out with a big chiddush in the time, that on the brain there's a certain gid which helps a person in his koyach hazikaron, in his remembering, and also in his koyach of deep thinking, and he wrote a whole thesis on it. So the Rashab heard this, he said, "I know this." So he pulled out some of the ksavim of the Mitla Rebbe, and he showed, I don't know if it was the professor or somebody else, that about six or seven lines in this paper where he talks about this gid in the brain. And he says that if it, sometimes it's used for remembering and sometimes it's used for oimek. And the Mitla Rebbe explains that when a person is thinking very deeply, he puts his head down in thought. But when he wants to remember something, he puts his head up. He says, because this gid, he says, depending which direction it goes in, will facilitate either the remembering or the deep thinking. That's what he said, the Mitla Rebbe. So when the professor saw this, he couldn't believe it. So he says, what, he studies science? He studies biology? So the Rashab said, no, he studies the Adam upstairs. So he knows from the Adam in the Partsufim, so that there's a gid like that. So he said, if there's a gid like that in the Partsufim, there's a gid like that on the bench too. That's how he knew. Emissa Ruach HaKodesh. Emissa Ruach HaKodesh.
What was the meaning for that?
He saw that this wasn't a human thought. It was Mamash Ruach HaKodesh. In his Torah is a Ruach HaKodesh. On Yom Kippur, he was seen over the course of the day that he would take off his shirt and he would take off his undershirt, and it was dripping in sweat. But because he was afraid of schita, so he wouldn't take it off with his hands. He would take it off with some type of a clamp. He didn't want to touch it so that it would squeeze out any of the sweat. So he shouldn't be over on schita. This happened two, three, four times on Yom Kippur. He was drenched, and once the one of the Hasidim, or maybe it was one of the Rebbes, that he said, "You see how hard the Rebbe works for you? See how hard the Rebbe's working for you? That he's schwitzing like this three, four times over the course of a Yom Kippur to change his shirt, his undershirt. Appreciate what a tzaddik is doing for his chassidim. You don't always see that." One of the well-known stories, I heard this from my Rebbe, that the Mittler Rebbe didn't live next to his father, even Bachayev, and he acted not mamash like a Rebbe, but he was a very big mashpia. And there was a yid in that town that the Mittler Rebbe made a comment once about him, putting him down a little bit. I didn't think it was the nicest comment. And he said to him something along the lines of, you know, you're shvach davening, or it wasn't exactly like that. It wasn't very nice, but it wasn't the opposite either. So he turned to him, and this chassid, and he said to him, he says, "What are you trying to do? Are you trying to compare me to you?" He says, "Think about it. You're the son of the Heilige Baal HaTanya. You grew up in the lap of Kedusha and Tara, Chassidus and Tara and Tefillah." He says, "But me," he says, "I came from regular parents." He says, "You know what my day looks like? I have to wake up very, very early before Chatzais. I have to make it over to my boss. And we're working in the fields and in the farms. And I have to do for hours. I'm plicking and plucking and doing all different types of things. And then I'm able to run home to go to the mikvah, to chop a minion, which I have to down very quickly. And in order to make it back to the boss by 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock that morning." He says, You're trying to compare me to you, that I should daven like you?" When he heard this, he was trembling. He says he dropped everything and he headed to his father, to the Baal HaTanya. And he was sobbing and he broke down. And he says, "What's going to be with me? What's going to be with me? My avodah is nothing. And compared to a simple farmer, I can't. So a few months later, so this chassid came to come see the Rebbe, to come see the Baal HaTanya. When he walked in, as soon as he walked in, the Baal HaTanya said to him, "I have to thank you. So I have to thank you because of you, my son Beryl is a chassid now." So now he's a chassid. Finally, he became a chassid. Very deep story. As he said before, that when he would learn, it was a very big amkan, very, very deep thinking. And he was once watching one of his children. He had many. I think he had eight girls and two sons. His most famous of the bunch was not any of his children. It was his son-in-law, the Tzemach Tzedek, who was makabel the admirers from him. And once he was, I guess, watching one of the children, and one of the children fell out of the crib, and he didn't notice it at all. And even though the baby was crying, he was in a different place. But the Baal HaTanya heard it from upstairs. So the Baal HaTanya came down and picked up the baby and put it in the crib. And he tapped his son on the shoulder and he says, "You could be a very big amkan in your learning." He says, "But if there's a yid, if there's a child who's crying, you have to have ears to be able to hear a crying yid, even in the amkas of your learning." That was a lesson for life. Karlach said that. That story? Yeah, it wasn't just a lesson in parenting, it was a lesson in life that he would need as a Rebbe, he would need that story. The Baal HaTanya and the Kedushas Levi were mechutanim. And once the Baal HaTanya wanted to impress the Kedushas Levi with the Torahs of the Mittler Rebbe, so he called him out to share a Torah, and at first the Mittler Rebbe didn't want to. But he said, "Okay, Pate says, I'll say Torah. Only on one condition. The Kedusha Slavi doesn't show any hespilus. He's not allowed to." Kedusha Slavi would get into such a dveikus that he would kind of lose himself in the dveikus. Every tzaddik had different ways. And Kedusha Slavi, did we speak about Kedusha Slavi yet? Anyways, it was his Kedusha Slavi style. So he didn't want to share Tyrus, but he made a deal that the Kedusha Slavi said, "Okay, I'm going to control myself." Couple minutes into the Torah, so Kedusha Slavi was trying to control himself, but he can't. He's like peeling like his shirt off his arm, and then he's into his skin, and he can't control himself. Finally, he's jumping on the table and he's disrupting the whole Torah, and he's going wild and in a total dveikus. So the Mittler Rebbe stopped and he said, "I understand. We made a deal. You know, I say the Torah, you stay quiet." So he says, "The truth is, I could have contained myself, but I saw that the malachim who came to listen to your Torah were getting jealous of you. And I started to make kitchig on you. So I had, in order to disrupt their lashon hara, I had to make a scene." That's what he said. I said that. So when it comes to tzaddikim, we really don't know very much of what they see, what they know, what they hear, why things are done. So, You have to explain to him from what he saw. You have to act that way. And with this, although the Mittler Rebbe, he didn't like to be involved in Meifsin and things like that. He used to send, he had a brother who was a very big tzaddik and a big Baal Meifis, and he was a B'chaim Avram. And he would send people to him if they needed yeshuas and things like that. But when it came Lag BaOmer, he was a big Rebbe. On Lag BaOmer, he would be pulling yeshuas and people would come. And there was a whole Indian Lag BaOmer. So the Bav Chavi once explained that although I didn't hear this Mefurish, the reason why, but in the Hakdama to his Sefer, which is called Teres Chaim, so when maybe think it's a son-in-law, the Tzemach Tzedek, he writes there that my father-in-law, that when he died, when he passed away, he was in the middle of saying Torah when he passed away. And he was saying the pasuk ki imcha mekor chayim ba'orcha nira'or, that with you Hashem you were the root of all life and your light reveals all light. When he came to the words ki imcha mekor, before he said the word chayim came out of his mouth, he passed away. And that's what it says in the Zohar Kaddish about Reb Shimon. It says Reb Shimon was saying the pasuk chayim ad olam, but before he could say the word chayim, he passed away. Kimat before he said the word chayim, he passed away. So in the same way that the Mittler Rebbe, since he passed away in the same tzura as Hashem Bayuchai, so the Maharsha Rebbe said, that's probably the reason why he had a kesher to Lag BaOmer. He was like the Rashbi of the generation. He had that idiom with like Rashbi, Amkus and Kabbalah and Chassidus and Amish. So that was on Teskis Day. The day that he passed away was the day that he was born.